Good morning, everybody. This is Ryan Ellis with TechConnex, and you're listening to the TechConnex podcast, the business of your business. Before we begin today's session, I just wanted to thank everybody for listening to the podcast and the peer group recordings this past year. We're really happy with the results that we were able to achieve. A couple of highlights from this year. Listeners from 13 different countries, 45 episodes were recorded and close to 2,300 minutes of recording time. So I want to thank everybody once again for listening, participating, and I'm really looking forward to further sessions in 2021. And today's session is with Boris Martin. He is the CEO of Engineers Without Borders Canada. And Boris and I talk about the amazing work that EWB Canada is doing for the African startup community, particularly with technology firms. And Boris and I just talk about the work that they're doing, the stuff that's going on within Africa, especially over the last year. And you know, there's a lot of promising things being done, and the future looks good, really good for African tech companies. So people need to take notice and you know, take a listen to this podcast. So with that, enjoy, and happy holidays to you all. And with that, enjoy the listen. Good morning, TechConnex. This is Ryan Ellis, membership director, and welcome to the December edition of the TechConnex podcast, the business of your business. And today I am really excited about my conversation with Boris Martin. Boris is the CEO of Engineers Without Borders Canada. And I had the pleasure of meeting Boris in November through an acquaintance. And I will give a shout out to Tim Collins of StaffLink. Thank you for the introduction. The reason I wanted to bring Boris on today was to talk about EWB's initiatives, the great work that they're doing in Africa, and to learn a little bit more about Boris Martin and his journey as the CEO of an amazing charitable organization. So with that, welcome Boris to the TechConnex podcast.
Hi, Ryan. It's exciting to be here. Thanks for hosting me on this podcast. It was really nice to be part of the CEO conversation a bit earlier this month as well. Lots of respect for the work you're doing and for your members. So yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, and vice versa. I know it's an honor to meet you, and I'm really looking forward to your story today and talking about Engineers Without Borders. So thank you for coming on this morning. And you know, I'll start off with the easiest question. What is EWB? And who are you guys?
Nice. Well, EWB, yeah, Engineers Without Borders. We often go with the acronym. It's an it's really a collection of passionate individuals who are concerned about, you know, like global challenges, extreme inequalities and poverty. Like, we see vulnerable people around the world, you know, mass migrations. Like, every time there's a natural disaster, there's people who are losing their livelihoods around the world. And we don't see that kind of vulnerability, you know, in our economies. And so it's something that 20 years ago was very, very like present in the two founders' mind. They're two young, they were engineers from University of Waterloo. And they said, look, engineers and technology should be making a positive difference in people's lives. There's a lot in the world that doesn't sit right with us. So we got to do something about it. And it really created a movement across the country. Like, hundreds of engineers, thousands of engineers in the matter of a few years said, yeah, that's a mission that we resonate with. We, you know, we took engineering because we wanted to do something positive in the world. And so you don't really sometimes not get to do that or see that or feel that in your day-to-day job. And or even in your studies, frankly, in engineering. And so the organization came together with massive growth in the first decade, with the realization that we ought to be doing something when we see great disparities in the world. So that's kind of like how, you know, it's 20 years, and obviously it's evolved a lot, but that's kind of like how it started.
So you've been with EWB for a decade now, and can you speak to, you know, your progression
and what you've seen over the last 10 years within Canada with the great work you guys are doing.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot, because you're right. I started, and Engineers Without Borders is offering young students across the country a way to, like, then, you know, once they want to make a difference, to learn about how to make a difference and to kind of like develop a little bit of critical thinking about solutions that might be quick fixes, but don't necessarily work in the long term. And kind of like saying, hey, you know, we've been trying to, you know, improve people's lives with technology for a long time, but like, is it really like in places like I stayed 3 years in Burkina Faso. I lived there with, you know, families, and I worked there alongside organizations that are trying to, you know, to improve people's lives there. And, you know, it was like, sometimes you see short-term projects that are not actually really making a difference, or they might make a difference in the beginning. You know, there's stories of, you know, a group might come into a village and build a water pump and install the water pump. It's a big celebration, you know, in that community, because first access to safe water, you know, first ever. But then the group leaves very happy with their work. And then, you know, 12, 18 months later, the water pump is actually broken. The spare parts might not be in the market. The incentives or even the capital to repair and the services, you know, aren't there. And so short-term fixes, you know, that don't actually change the game, we're a bit frustrating. And so EWB in the early days thought, you know, technology can drive extraordinary change. We're going to go and we're going to help people adopt, you know, simple technologies like water pumps. But very quickly, the organization learned, and our members learned, and I learned as a member. You know, I was at university at McMaster. I took an engineering degree there, and the organization learned, and all of our members learned that, you know, if you really want to make a difference, you got to think a little bit more critically about the whole system. It's not just about the tech. It's not just about the pump. And, you know, from there, we kind of like started building the capacity of a multitude of organizations using technology to make a difference. You know, and then the world changed. That was like, you know, first decade of EWB was 2000 to 2010. And, you know, I was in Africa in between 2007 and 2010. And I can tell you, the day I arrived, there was almost no way I could call my parents back home. There was like, I could not, like the signal was terrible. You know, bandwidth, there was no internet bandwidth. Like there was no cables in the ground, like in West Africa at all. And then by 2010, 3 years later, I mean, cell phones were just everywhere. Everyone had a cheap, you know, sort of like feature phone in their hands. The poorest, like the cell phone penetration, like there were, you know, stats where like there's more SIM cards than there are people in Kenya. You know, like it's, so we saw a massive wave of change, you know, and cables, you know, in 2010, I was driving south from Burkina Faso down towards the coast of Ghana. And along the road, there's this main road going south there that you could see the trenches of internet cables being dug and cables being laid in the ground. And I mean, think about that infrastructure and what it does to connectivity and to people, to increasing opportunities for people to create new companies, to use digital tech in a different way. And so the second decade of EWB is very much like a redefinition of technology. It's not just your first industrial revolution, you know, kind of like pumps and hammer mills, and which are important, but it's also the digital tech. And today we see, you know, digital currencies being adopted in Kenya, you know, way ahead of the rest of the world. Penetration of digital banking in East Africa is like through the roof as compared to even Canada. So, you know, where is the emerging market now when it comes to digital techs? Well, it's not actually that clear. You know, I think there's entrepreneurs in Kenya today, in Uganda, in Nigeria, in Ghana, Ethiopia, that are building tech that's like inspiring, challenging, and that we should learn from and connect with. The reality though is that, you know, these entrepreneurs don't necessarily have access to the same family and friends and capital and frankly, you know, sort of leading edge, you know, tech parks and skills as we do here in Canada. And so for EWB, it kind of like has, over the second decade, kind of changed a little bit the way we think about our mission. I mean, ultimately, it's the same. It's technology driving extraordinary change. But rather than, you know, being the ones traveling and feeling good about, like, you know, building a well in a village, we're just like finding entrepreneurs, bold entrepreneurs in their own markets, in their own communities, and then providing them the support they need to succeed, you know? And so I've met in your network a few people that are, you know, successful tech entrepreneurs themselves. And now they've, you know, they've taken a sort of an angel investor approach on the side. And so they would understand the concept. You know, when you invest in someone, when you provide them the tools to succeed, and when you're with them in their corner every day, you see them grow exponentially. And it means that, you know, as a charity that usually would have a mindset of service and providing one thing one time, and then it kind of like gets used and you know, the entrepreneurial approach and the impact investing approach creates exponential results. And I've seen it on EWB's sort of like results balance sheet, you know, like for every dollar that we have used of programming in the past for the first decade, well, we got $1 of programmatic results. But today, for every dollar that we've spent in the companies we support in Africa, we get more than 10 times that return. The number of people we've supported, the number of people that access new services and products is just like through the roof. And through a pandemic, a program that needs to be sustained day in and day out with external funding and external capacity stops because you can't travel anymore. But when you've supported an entrepreneur locally, they continue because they can't afford to stop because that's their livelihood, right? And so it makes a huge difference in the durability of the work that we're doing.
So one of the questions I have, got me thinking about a few different things right now. Who, like, obviously within 20 years, you've seen a massive change of infrastructure. Like, obviously everybody needs the internet. The cell phones are kind of the caveat, mm-hmm. the start of the technology boom in Africa. What's driving it? Is this a local thing, an independent thing? Is this coming from government? Is this mm-hmm. being driven by big business, foreign entities? Because I know there's some,
yeah,
big countries that have dumped a lot of money into Africa for obviously to grow technology. So is it a combination of everything? But what's the main driving force with the technology boom within Africa?
Mm-hmm. I think there's a combination of things. One is infrastructure. So like the connectivity and the like laying down the base infrastructure and connecting these economies is a hugely important step, and that's happened and that's still happening. But I think it's also like, let's recognize that, you know, there's a lot of things to be built in a country like Kenya or Burkina Faso, where I lived for a while, that are completely mature in our economy. And, you know, I left Canada in 2007. I did a PhD in engineering and I submitted my thesis. And, you know, like when you're a PhD is not necessarily entrepreneurial. Like a PhD is kind of like fundamental research, you know, lab work. So I put out my thesis, defended, you know, corrected, put it out to the printer. And then, you know, a month later I was in a plane, I was going to Africa. So I was not quite not the typical kind of definition of your entrepreneur, but I started a business a year and a half later with a friend of mine in rural Burkina Faso, because everything needs to be done. Like everything can be built. Like there's so many opportunities that it's almost overwhelmingly exciting. And so I think that's the other piece. You know, to give you an example, recently we've supported and we've invested in and we're supporting a company called MPost in Kenya. MPost has created a patented solution. It's a PO box, like a postal box on your cell phone. It's a digital PO box. So in Canada, it's irrelevant. Pretty much. I mean, like, you and I have a street address, we have a home. If Canada Post can find us and they can deliver something to our door. In Kenya, there's 54 million people in the country. There's 400,000 of them that have a mailbox. 400,000. So, you know, for the founders of that company, they were, the founder had a, what basically the inception story of that company is that one of the founders had gone for a job interview with the government, never heard back, but then realized that actually the government sends, doesn't call you, they just send you a letter. And the letter was like in a PO box shared with 400 other families, you know? And so he never actually got the job, but he did get the job. He found the letter, but just too late. And so, you know, it's like, and that's just a small story, but can you imagine, you know, if you're in a place that doesn't have, where the streets have no name, you know, where you're not, you can't actually receive a parcel, you're out of the digital e-commerce economy. There's so many things you just can't do. And so, you know, in Kenya, this technology is really revolutionary. It's a government recognized address. So now you can actually get a delivery to your door, thanks to your GPS on your phone. So you don't even need to live in one space. So like now, you know, for you, Ryan, imagine if you're going on holidays somewhere else in PEI, well, then suddenly your mail can, you don't even need a mail forward. You just need a cell phone. So you know, that's a phenomenal leapfrog. You know, you can imagine how a service like that is actually thinking about distribution in a completely different way. And it's the future. It's our future. It's their future. So, you know, I don't think someone would create M-Post from Toronto. You know, it would be far out of the realm of imaginable, but someone out in Kenya can. And it ends up benefiting everybody. So to me, that's the belief. You know, we're past the, oh, they need our help, you know, these poor entrepreneurs who have nothing. That's not the tone anymore. Now the tone is like we're changing the world. Like there's entrepreneurs and innovators everywhere. Why would you shun half of the planet? And the half of the planet is also women in engineering and women in tech. Like, so we've got to rally around this, realize that we need to bring more people to the table because that accelerates the process of innovation. Everyone learns. And for EWB, for Engineers Without Borders Canada, well, it's a super inspiring platform and a challenging platform for our members to learn, right? Because rather than being confined to your campus or to your city, you're thinking about global entrepreneurship. You're being inspired by people in completely different markets building really significant stuff. And so, you know, you think your definition of success changes. And so I think that's good for Canada. You know, it's good for Canada to have more entrepreneurs, to have more globally minded folks that are engaging in the world. And it's good for the developing world that's solving the problems that matter to them. And they deserve a chance, you know? So there's a huge imbalance in the availability of capital and talent in our markets. So to me, that's where we can stand up to our responsibility and engage.
You know, you get me thinking, because obviously it's Christmas and everybody is getting deliveries sent home. But the big thing, like you did within the United States, 2 million packages, like front door packages get stole every year because nobody's home. So this technology would be needed for delivery, sure. Like deliver it to me when I'm at work.
Yeah, no, exactly. Or send me an SMS the moment you're getting to my door. Like, because, automatically.
Yeah, because theft's huge. And so obviously this technology is applicable to anybody.
Oh, yeah.
And I also feel like it's obviously applicable in Canada. We're the second largest country in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Northern population. And obviously, you know, people off the grid.
Yeah.
And so, it's mind blowing things. I guess one of the other things I'm thinking about as we were talking here is within Africa, is this continuity across every country or are some countries still in the dark? Is this like Ethiopia, Kenya, you know, Egypt, South Africa. Is this consistent or is it kind of only countries that have this ability right now?
Africa is a big and diverse continent, right? People don't oftentimes, because our maps are so skewed, like maps of the world are so skewed, we think of Africa as a small continent, or like compare it to Canada in size. I mean, I think it's the size of China, the US, a part of Europe all combined. Like if you see visual maps of what the actual size of the continent covers, it is humongous.
Yeah.
So that's one of the paradigm shifts. The other one is it's very diverse in terms of economies, you know, advanced economies, you know, South Africa and Egypt and Tunisia, and then some really places that are really challenging to get ahead. Like I lived in Burkina Faso, I can tell you it's a country that economically is quite challenged, and has a very difficult climate. And so, like, you know, the accumulation of resources is harder. And frankly, the continent is also, you know, emerging from, you know, more than a century's worth of colonialism that, you know, has depleted resources, right? So like, you have to take a historical, you know, perspective to all this. And so you're right, there is, and even in the tech space, there are hotspots, you know, Kenya is one, Ghana, Rwanda, you know, Nigeria. So there's a few hotspots of create, and South Africa, you know, quite evidently. And you know, I wouldn't be fair to so many of other places that have thriving hubs, like in Senegal as well, in the Francophone Africa. But so, and Côte d'Ivoire, I mean, like the list doesn't stop there. Like there's a lot happening. But you're right, it's diverse. And the other thing, Ryan, is like, you know, at the beginning of, and first, like people, it's diverse. And oftentimes it's the negative story that ends up winning the day, at least in our media. And so, and I think that's getting in the way of people getting involved, frankly. You know, there's a lot, you know, every time you think about it, like if you Google Africa on CBC or like any sort of Google forms, it's usually going to be the negative stories that are there. And I think it's completely unfair, especially today. And it's unfair to those entrepreneurs that are trying to, that are making huge companies, that are really building the world differently. And I have to, you know, recognize now, you know, Jack Dorsey at Twitter and Jack Ma and a few others have like actually shown, they've said like, we're going to Africa. They've traveled, you know, Zuckerberg traveled to Kenya and met some of the tech hubs there. Like, there's a lot of the sort of impressive tech entrepreneurs or successful tech entrepreneurs of our markets that have made the step to go and say, this is the future. And so I think maybe that's going to change a little bit the narrative. That's one thing. But, you know, when the pandemic started, everyone in the media was like, oh, Africa's going to be decimated for sure. They have no health system. Like, it's going to be another catastrophe, almost like, you know, the pundits kind of like stewing how the same story of Africa again. Yeah. And what we've seen is actually quite different. I mean, one, you know, country leaders, elected officials in those countries took the step of closing economies much, much earlier than what happened in Europe and North America, especially. And that potentially because the wave kind of hit them a little bit later. And so the lockdowns happened at the same time, you know, in a place like Kenya, as they did in the UK, kind of around the same dates, except the number of cases in the UK might have been like in the thousands. They were in the tens in Kenya, right? So like anticipating and like a proper leadership in anticipating the wave. The other thing is like, you know, Africa is used to dealing with pandemics. Like there's a lot of ugly, ugly diseases there that governments have learned to manage. And so, you know, so that's also kind of like, that's also part of it. People are younger. And so the health, if you look at the health indicators on the pandemic, it's actually not affected the continent as strongly certainly not as strongly as the United States, but not as strongly as South America, North America, Europe, or even Asia. And I think that's a good thing for them. And at the same time, let's also recognize that the economic impact has been humongous, because African economies are some of the least able to borrow themselves out of a crisis, because they're already in debt. And so there's no way, and I can tell you that for experience, because our the entrepreneurs we support are dealing with small businesses in their own countries. There's no wage subsidy. You know, there's no rent relief. There's no emergency, you know, lines of borrowing for business. And so it's really hurting people's livelihoods. Like, it's really urgent that we do something there, because the economic impact is humongous. And so when you were asking, you know, where are the technology hubs, and like, where is it thriving? There are a few places that are thriving, but the pandemic has really kind of like wreaked havoc, I would say. And it will be a phenomenal upswing. You know, there are businesses that are digital tech that are ready, that haven't, you know, stopped operating. So that's exciting. It's a little bit like what's happened in the digital space in our countries. But they're going to need the capital. They're going to need the support, you know, to succeed. So it's an opportunity for partners like KWB to play our part.
One of the things, yeah, that interested me and why I wanted to do this was exactly, you know, when people start talking about Africa, they obviously go right to the negative. They talk about obviously famine, you know, wildlife, resource loss.
Yeah.
Weather, drought, everything. But the thing is, like, there is a nugget of gold, and you just have to break away the earth to find out there's more gold, good things happening in Africa. So this is one of the reasons I wanted to have this discussion. And one of the things I wanted to bring up was Bloomberg just released an article, I believe it was maybe Friday of last week, talking about the technology boom within Africa, because Africa, despite its errors and emissions with some of the things that have happened, they did the smart thing. They locked down quicker than anybody else. And like you said, people don't really understand the geography of how massive it is, and a massive effort to, you know, we got to lock down, because if we don't do this, we're going to be in big trouble. And obviously history dictates, if you don't act fast, things are going to happen. So, you know, you speak eloquently about the fact that they did that. And I just brought up a stat of this Kenya, because that's what we're talking about. 45 million people in Kenya, and they've had 93,000 COVID cases.
That is
huge. And they've had less than 1,600 deaths. So that is huge. Obviously,
For sure.
Nobody's safe, but that just talks about the resilience and, you know, being proactive about some of these things. I guess, one of the other things I wanted to talk about was kind of the advantages and, you know, disadvantages of some of these, some of the things that entrepreneurs in Africa are facing. Like, what are some of the upsides that they might get versus, you know, startups within Canada, but what are some of the disadvantages that they're also facing right now?
Well, I would say, especially, you know, we support businesses that are at the seed stage, and some of them, like, actually most of the companies when we find them are pre-revenue, or are they just like in the very early stages of revenue. And as you know, businesses at that stage are constantly fundraising. And so for those who are in the middle of or early in a new round of fundraising, we're really affected by the pandemic, because it was difficult. People, frankly, like, everyone, you know, ran to higher grounds. So like, people still had capital to deploy, but they deployed it to like later stage ventures, to later stage funds, to things that, you know, they went down the valley of risk, and they like took less of it. And so, you know, for partners like us, we felt a little lonely being at the seed stage with them and with limited capital, because for Engineers Without Borders, same thing. You know, like, we didn't know whether, charitably minded folks would, and philanthropists in this country would kind of like consider doing a little bit extra this year, or if everyone would actually fear for their own financial safety and therefore pull back on donations, right? Like, so, and the story is still being told, like I think that's the big challenge for entrepreneurs, is like, at a time where they need, when in fact, at a time where it's the most transformative, you know, there's a lot of large disruptive companies that have been built out of moments of crisis, you know, and to me, that's where it's both it's both the exciting part and the tragedy, is that, you know, there's fewer people willing to take the risk, but taking the risk should pay off way more.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I would say that's one of the challenges. Obviously, the lockdowns were a huge challenge, but I can tell you, like, there's a fintech in Uganda that we support. Their name is Numida Technologies. And of course, at the beginning of the pandemic, you're like, oh my God, we're like in the bridge round. They're like, they're really close to their Series A. They have good traction, product market fit. What they do is like, they have they allow shop owners to digitize their operations, to move from a paper-based bookkeeping to a digital bookkeeping. And it allows them to do basically lending, you know, on demand, unsecured lending to these businesses for cash flow. Very similar to some of the stuff that Borrowell now is doing on their platform, except that Borrowell doesn't do the financial tracking, I don't think, but they have credit score. And so, you know, Numida Tech is helping businesses manage their operations and manage their finances better. And as a byproduct, can become lenders. And so they're really an MFI. So during the first wave of the pandemic, they're like, businesses are losing their, like, our clients have had to shut down. They're not going to pay their loans back. If like $100 loan, $500 loan for inventory, they're not going to be able to pay it back. And so what they had to do was like go back and tell their clients, like, look, don't pay it back. We understand your livelihood. We understand that you depend on this, and suddenly you have no revenue, and you're not going to get wage subsidy or rent subsidy. So, you know, as long as there is a lockdown, we're delaying your repayment schedule. By doing that, they earned humongous amounts of goodwill from like their thousands of clients. And I've seen their data. They are rocket ship in terms of like the number of new users on their platform. Repayment rates are back. Like they're basically consistently, you know, growing, and they're getting a phenomenal traction. And they're a digital bank. So there's no bank in that country, no sort of brick and mortar bank, that will be fast enough to help small business recover, because the length it takes to go to the bank and get your loan is just disqualifying for small loan.
Yeah.
But small loans is what is needed in the country right now to restart the economy. And so I think we're going to have some of our startups be such like well-positioned actors in actually getting the countries back on track and it doing well in the process. And so I think that's why I argue to people around me that it's a good time to support them for impact. So EWB does it for impact, but I think, you know, profit-minded folks who have an appetite for risk, because let's be real, it's like, you know, it's still very early stage. Those are very challenging markets. You know, the going public and you know, liquidity events don't happen, you know, every day. And so, like, you know, the we do it with charitable donations, because we recognize that the majority of our work is not about the money, it's not about the return, it's about the impact, and it's about building these enterprises. It's like co-building, right? And we take a humongous amount of risk, and we're basically in the business of de-risking for others to come in.
You bring up, I guess I have two questions. How many companies are you currently working with right now, and what do you anticipate for 2021? With how many companies are you looking to work with or
support
the next year?
Yeah. So there's a couple responses to that. One, the main offering that EWB brings to the table is really not the capital; it's the talent, right? Like, we are a people organization, and so Engineers Without Borders. Like, if you want to be part of this, Ryan, I can find you a tech startup in Kenya that really needs your skills. And usually, 2 years ago, I would have pitched you to take a year off and to actually go and be an entrepreneur with somebody else and get an experience out of it. You would get an EWB fellowship.
Yep.
And that would be the value proposition to you. And obviously the entrepreneur gets phenomenal talent because they get a smart, person like you to support them pro bono to build the startup. And so that's kind of the platform we've built. When the pandemic hit, we had to scale that back. Like, the prime minister was on the stage saying, Canadians come home. That was like the, second week of March. Canadians come home. I can tell you, for me, it created a bit of a problem because I had 35 of them in like really hard to reach places. And so, we had to repatriate. But we said, there's no way we're going to default on our mission. Our mission is to support these entrepreneurs. We are not leaving them behind. And so what we created was a virtual talent exchange. We actually... it took us 3 weeks. We built a platform, digital platform, for people to raise their hand and say, here's my CV. I don't have a full-time, availability, but I can provide, 5 hours a week or 10 hours a month to support, on a very specific job description, very specific project to support an entrepreneur overseas. And then what we did is, we facilitated a series of matching, with our current portfolio of ventures, the one that we've invested in capital as well as other ones that are in our pipeline. So we've supported 35 organizations in the past 6 months. And our target for 2021 is 80 organizations.
Wow.
More
than double. So, okay.
And so the digital platform is really allowing us to accelerate and to support more startups. It's a great way for us to build pipeline and to understand who's who. And to answer the second part of your question, we found over time, over the past 6 years, we've identified 11 companies that we felt had tremendous, tremendous potential. And we're at such an early stage that our capital would be relevant. And would be catalytic. And so we've made investments in 11 companies. We've made a few other follow-on investments in some of them. Some of them have failed. surprise, surprise. That's the reality of that kind of work. Mm-hmm. So currently we have 8 companies in the portfolio. One of them actually died during the pandemic, but 2 of them before that. And but that's still a pretty decent survival rate, they range from in Kenya we have an education technology company allowing kids to practice after school their math and their language, and we have fintech companies, quite a few of them. It's a space that's ripe for disruption. I described MPost to you. We have a few in the agriculture space, in like sustainable agriculture, climate resilient agriculture, some really smart things. One of them is called Green Path Foods in Ethiopia. So the companies are on our website and we'll continue making these like small investments whenever we can be really disproportionately catalytic. And to give you the catalytic, by catalytic, I mean like by because being an investor will catalyze others to be investors as well, right? Like we're going to go in and it's going to be a signal, and it's right at it's the right timing. This venture is going to take off. And we've done that 11 times. Our catalytic ratio is 24 right now. So for every dollar we've invested, $24 of follow-on have been invested. So those are good metrics. When you look at it, I've over the years, I've had to learn, you know, the world of angel investing, and those are good benchmarks for our sector.
Okay. We're coming almost to the end of our conversation, obviously you're moving into the next 10 years, 2021, just a couple of weeks away. So, you know, I'll leave you with this. What's the next 10 years going to look like for EWB? And I guess also, I guess EWB as a whole around the world. So there must be other chapters. Canada just can't be the only one. Obviously, there's probably something in the United States and Europe. So what's like, what are you hoping for in the next 10 years?
Yeah, I think the role of technology in society is something that today defines our lives. Like humans are technological beings, you know? And so I think for a movement of engineers, and it's not just for engineers, but it's like, humanity needs to come to terms with the way technology affects society in the pluses and in the positives and the negatives, and learn to handle it. And I believe that a vehicle like Engineers Without Borders that basically influences that movement towards a positive outcome, using technology for, you know, ends that really benefit people's lives, is part of influencing the future in that way. So that's what I want to see. I want to see this like digital platform grow to like multi, you know, international scale. I want to see our approach to like entrepreneurship and impact investing become more predominant, especially in the world of creating sustainable and inclusive economies. Like there's a lot of work to be done in fields like health and education and vaccinations. There's publicly funded work that needs to be done as well. You know, let's not denigrate that. You know, programmatic, you know, publicly driven work is really important, and that's traditional development aid, like it's really needed. And in the world of market development and sustainable economic growth, we've got to do more entrepreneurial. We do more impact investing. So I'm hoping that EWB is part of making that happen, and to make that happen in Canada. To answer the question about the global movement, like EWB was founded in Canada in 2000. It's a Canadian organization. We're independent from the other EWBs, though we talk to each other and we have a similar mandate, obviously. But this impact investing and entrepreneur-focused approach is unique to EWB Canada.
Awesome.
And you know, we're a charitable organization still at the end of the day. So when you were telling me like, 2021 is starting, and you know, let me say for your audience, like if you want a technology for good, you know, organization in this country, and you're thinking about where are you going to put your charitable donation this year, my invitation, heartfelt, you know, is for you to consider Engineers Without Borders. And it's super easy. Like if you Google ewb.ca/donate, you know, you'll find our page. But you know, this work is unique. You know, there aren't that many organizations in the world that are taking the approach we're taking. It's fun. It's inspiring. The stories of entrepreneurs are just out of this world. And so being involved is not just about your donation. It's also about like connecting with a group of people that are making a lot of stuff happen.
Awesome. Boris, I want to thank you for your time this morning. Inspiring story. I'm really proud that we've met and we've been able to have great conversations over the last couple of months. I want to thank you. Thank the team. Obviously wish you and your family nothing but the best. So anybody that's listening, it's www.ewb.ca for further information about Engineers Without Borders Canada. I will put a few links up in the post. So if you wish to connect to Boris and his team and to get further understanding about the great work that they're doing within Africa, you know, please do check it out. And with that, Boris, have a great weekend.
Thanks.
And we will talk soon.
Thanks, Ryan. It was awesome to chat with you. And so thanks a lot. Thanks to all your audience as well.
Right.
Keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you so much.
Cheers. We'll be right back.
Oh, thank you.